Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a great pleasure to say we're joined by an old friend who has moved on from the heavy labors he engaged in for many years.
I have escaped, Frank, from the confines of Washington.
This microphone's being hijacked, folks. Hang in there. He has left the Capitol grind, and he has now taken up a new burden at the Heartland. In fact, the Heartland Institute is its name. He is former Congressman Tim Kuhlskamp, a great leader, a great conservative, and we're catching up with him on the margins of the Conservative Political Action Conference, where this program is being recorded. It's great to have you with us. Thank you, Tim, for joining us. And tell us a little bit about the Heartland Institute. I think probably most of our audience is aware of it, but it's good to refresh.
Absolutely. You can check us out at heartland.org. We're a 34-year-old think tank, just happens to be based in Chicago. But our principal focus is promoting freedom solutions and principles of free markets to solve social and economic problems. And what that means is we actually operate, Frank, in nearly every state of the union. We also operate here and work in Washington. We also do international work on climate change issues, taking on the Al Gore left on that. So we're a 50-plus-1 proposition. So, but as we sit here today, Congress is out of session, thank goodness.
Indeed.
But 43...
The public's a little safer.
Well, 43 legislatures are in session, so somebody's got to be there fighting for freedom and free markets, and we're doing that. So we're well-known in state after state of being the think tank on the ground helping defend freedoms.
Bless your heart. Well, defend freedom is what we're all about here, too. We do different parts of it, more or less, than you do. But there is an important Venn diagram overlap, which I want to discuss with you. Most immediately, Chicago, of course, has gained considerable notoriety, as I don't need to tell you, for being an unsafe place. Gun violence is very high, despite having some of the most stringent gun controls in the country. This is now in sharp relief, as you know so well, because of the mass murder down in Florida last week. Tim, talk us through your thoughts on this gun control stuff, and especially if you can tie it into the education piece of what you all do at Heartland, and whether, you know, we've got to do something consistent with our Constitution to save these schools from these kinds of predations.
Well, I was just on an interview just a few minutes ago taking calls from around the country, but the lack of education and understanding of the Second Amendment or any parts of the Constitution, you know, it's not shocking. It's just the way it is. Folks call in and say, well, you can't have a gun unless you're a member of the National Guard. I mean, the left has dreamt that up. They're misusing every crisis they can, which is shameful. But after 20 years of elective office, this is exactly the wrong thing with so many people in politics, so many of the left. They will misuse the crisis and the pain of mass murder.
The mayor of your city has
and
raised
Chicago.
That to an art form.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's great. If you want more government, more control, less Second Amendment rights, go to Chicago. How's that working out for you? But at the end of the day, it's a tragedy. But it's a tragedy that starts, I think, in our schools, the teachers' unions promoting their leftist agenda, instilling that in kids. They grow up, and unless they learn otherwise, you know, my kids in private school still getting a weekly reader that claims the world will end in a ball of fire in, you know, a decade or two, which is obviously not true, and the scientists don't believe that, but they're still preaching that in the schools. So, I mean, the big answer to
sets aside the possibility of divine punishment.
Well,
the
left believes
doing.
That is never
That's
possible.
Not what
the
they're
left.
Talking
yeah,
about.
No, that is definitely not. They are not talking about that. But to get to the heart of it, whether you're in Florida, whether you're in Chicago, or 48 other states in the nation, parents should have a choice to send their kids where they feel safe, where they're learning the values and principles of our Constitution. And we've had an initiative at the Heartland Institute for years to promote constitutional principles and education in our schools. You know, half the states actually have a requirement now that you teach civics in the schools. Question is, what are they teaching them?
Right.
At least they're talking about the Constitution and have to read, hopefully, the actual document. That's a fascinating read. It's something you should be proud of, but you should understand that. So on the issue of the Second Amendment, clearly a lot of misunderstanding that's been dictated by poor education choices for years.
Let me ask you about this, because we talked the other day with Larry Arn, who is also, as you know, Hillsdale College, doing great work on teaching on the Constitution. He made a comment that reminded me of one that I heard a former colleague of yours, Jim DeMint, saying, and that was the effect. He had a visual aid of a little pocket Constitution. He said, this document doesn't exist anymore. What exists now is just a whole series of court rulings that have mutated it beyond recognition.
Yes.
Where do you come down on that? Do we have a living constitution, as the left would have it be, or,
well, if
or
the left
a dead
had their way, it would be a dead constitution. That's really where they're at. But yeah, you got to understand that, and it can be complicated if you lose sight of the principles. But here's the principle, Frank. Just think about this, and I know you get it, but your listeners, don't forget the men who wrote that constitution. You know, there wasn't any women in that room because of the times.
Dead white men. Yes.
It was dead white men. But here's their understanding. They understood that power is corrupted, that government is not the answer, but they knew they needed government solution in the case of a federal government. But they understood it needed to be
particularly
contained.
Particularly for the national defense.
Absolutely. That
Which
was
one
the,
of the things I wish Heartland were doing more on.
But they understood that these were the same guys that were going to be the future president. And what they said was, we have to restrict our power.
Right.
But we have to make certain we can defend our country, and everything else needs to be contained.
Your work in this space is tremendously appreciated. Let me come back to the ball of fire. What the left is, of course, warning of is that we're all going to burn up because of the overheating of the planet, the global climate change, they sometimes call it, but they mean now, as opposed to a couple of decades ago when it was going to freeze, now they mean that it's going to overheat. One of the implications of all of that, as you know so well, and I know it's a focus of your efforts at Heartland Institute, is to curb the use of fossil fuels so as to prevent greenhouse gas emissions. In the process, they would dismantle our most resilient sources of energy and, I believe, put us at grave risk of future problems like, for example, the taking down of our electric grid. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on climate change, energy security, grid security.
It's probably been three or four decades now they've been dead wrong. I mean, the latest global warming period happens to coincide with them being wrong for 40 years of predictions. I mean, it's gotten so bad. I don't know if you saw the story where when there's snowballs on beaches in North Carolina, they explain that by saying a brand new concept called a warming hole. Now, it doesn't make any sense to me, and probably doesn't make any sense to your listeners, because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They just make it up. But what we've seen, particularly in this administration, is energy security is necessary for freedom. That we have tremendous energy resources, and the left has tried to make us insecure by taking away those resources, particularly by the war on fossil fuels, particularly the war on coal. That has reversed completely under this administration. It's why one reason why Trump won the election, won the states that he did in part, but it's a message that it takes on the left at its heart. They want to take away our security and our freedom by taking away our sources of energy. And that is, here's the word, that is cruel. That is wrong to drive up energy prices for poor people just because you want to control them. You know, and thinking worldwide.
But that fits the larger pattern
it
of
does.
Their attitude towards people, period.
Is attitude not only in America,
control.
But around the world. You know, over a billion people still use open fires to heat themselves. And what the left and Al Gore have been saying and Michael Bloomberg, they don't have to worry about that. They're saying, you know what, you don't need electricity. You don't need electricity in the ghettos or in the poor places around the country. So, I mean, and around the world. So it's Donald Trump is right. It's just not about energy, moving from energy dependence to energy independence. It's moving to energy dominance by promoting energy access around the world. Using our tremendous resources, we are actually freeing up millions of people, perhaps billions of people that are not under the control of dictators that are controlling energy choices. So Venezuela, too bad. Russia, too bad. Ukraine,
I'd
you might have
Saudi
some
Arabia.
Oh,
too
absolutely.
Bad.
You know, these are folks that they had been misusing their energy resources to control that. So America can be a beacon of freedom and opportunity and peace by promoting energy freedom here at home. It is a tremendous
From
message.
Your lips to God's ears, and the work of the Heartland Institute in doing all of that is tremendously appreciated. Thanks for your leadership, both in Congress and now at Heartland. Thanks, Tim Holzkamper. Come back to us soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting with smart, capable, and impactful people here at the Conservative Political Action Conference 2018, better known as CPAC, one of whom, I'm very pleased to say, is Maria Espinoza. We have spoken with her in the past, but it has been altogether too long, and there have been some important changes in her organization, which is called the Remembrance Project. Most importantly, my point of view, that she is now working in the swamp here in Washington, D.C., trying to help drain it, I think, and doing so as a voice, as her project's motto goes, a voice for victims killed by illegal aliens. Welcome back, Maria. It's great to have you with us.
Tell us what
was the genesis of your group, the Remembrance Project,
and why it's
needed now.
We started in 2009 in Houston, Texas. My husband, Tim Ling, and I, when we learned about sanctuary city policies in Houston, we just couldn't wrap our heads around that. And two police officers in Houston were killed, and one of the wives had filed a lawsuit against the city. Very curious as to why that killing, as tragic as it was, warranted a lawsuit. And lo and behold, we found out it was about sanctuary city policies, and we began to talk with our elected officials. You know, my father came from Mexico the right way, so it was just beyond me that this was taking place. And Tim created a database of Americans killed by illegal aliens, and we learned there's really an epidemic of killings all across the United States simply because current laws are not being enforced.
So this is criminal conduct, presumably, that extends beyond killing, but particularly horrific is the fact that these people have been engaging in the murder of people who live here in the country that they have managed to get into illegally. And Maria, I've had friends say to me, Michael Cutler particularly, one of our colleagues that we often feature here, that every state of the union is a border state now.
Exactly.
Even if they're not physically adjacent to a border or close by one or a port, everyone who is getting into this country illegally is wending their way into the states that aren't literally border states. Is that tracking with your data of the impact on these various states of illegal alien murders?
And we know Michael Cutler. He's great wealth of information as well. And he's absolutely right. Every state is a border state and is affected by illegal immigration. And we created the Stolen Lives Quilt banners for that reason, because it was so widespread, and we realized that the media, the fake news, if you will, was not reporting it or sweeping it under the rug, or you would have a killing in one locality, but the next town over, no report. So, you know, the American people weren't educated on what was really taking place, and therefore not making, I think, good decisions on who they elected.
Right. And that ultimately, of course, translates into policy, because to the extent that the people representing them are not clued up either. We have seen a succession of ill-advised legislative initiatives in this immigration space. As it happens, of course, we're in the midst of a thrash about the next set of those ill-advised decisions. So talk a little bit about where you all are coming down on what, well, for starters, the president has said he thinks ought to be done, including an amnesty for something on the order of 1.8 million of these illegal aliens.
Frank, we're not in agreement with an amnesty. You know, we want to support President Trump, keep all of his campaign promises. You know, an amnesty would be detrimental, especially at the position that our country is in now with illegal immigration, and you see the MS-13 gangs increasing and the uptake in the gang activity, but the opioid crisis as well. But most egregious of all is a loss of life. So what we're doing here in the swamp is trying to raise awareness and looking over the legislators' shoulders. And we had a meeting with Congressman Bob Goodlatte's office and chairman of the subcommittee of judiciary.
Chairman of the full committee.
We had a meeting with Congressman Goodlatte's office, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and that went very well. We could not endorse 4760 or even, you know, we're a C3. However, we can say we want existing laws enforced, but since it gave an amnesty, which is against what we believe in, we're not endorsing that piece of legislation.
Now, that is the Goodlatte bill, which is widely described as the most hard line of all of the options that we're likely to see. So if it's,
you know, it's funny you
still
say
not
that,
making the test.
You're right, because it's simple to us. Look, if the existing laws were enforced, we wouldn't need any more legislation. Why are our legislators creating bills that have stiffer penalties when they're not even endorsing our scheme? Why are our legislators creating legislation that has stiffer penalties when they're not even enforcing existing laws?
Yeah. I guess one of the things that is held out as a redeeming feature of the Goodlatte legislation, and again, when we talk about this, there's some discussion that it's being watered down as we speak. I'm talking about the most robust version of the Goodlatte bill. But, Maria Espinoza, there is language in there authorizing the full wall and the funding thereof. There's language in there requiring the application of the E-Verify system to employment. There is an end to the chain migration, no kidding. There is an end to the diversity lottery, no kidding. So those seem to me to be improvements that would be desirable. I take your point and don't like the piece about the amnesty, modest, relatively speaking, as it is. But it's absolutely imperative, it seems to me, that we need to have the magnet for more of these illegal aliens turned off before we start incentivizing more of them to come here, which is the practical effect of an amnesty.
And you know there's problems with that, Frank, as far as the E-Verify. You know, it's already a law that if you work in the United States, you have to be legally authorized to work here, period. And there is a loophole with the 1099, the contractors, the contract workers, are not officially dubbed as employees, so they get away with it. And the IRS gives out the I-10 numbers, the individual tax identification numbers. So they give them out to illegal aliens so that they can work here, create a company, taking more jobs away from Americans. We don't know who these people are. And also you mentioned
The wall and the diversity lottery and the chain migration.
Yes, so many. Now, the wall, you know, we need that wall like yesterday, not 10 years down the road. And as you know, what happened, you know, the previous administration, all it takes is just a pen, someone with a pen and a phone, right? To stop
that
construction. So, you know, I want to see the wall. I want to see it up and Americans protected. And I want to see our unemployment percentages lowered because Americans are back at work. And, you know, all of that, the lowering of crimes by MS-13 gangs, that has to be done before we amnesty.
Well, we particularly appreciate the work that you're doing to document and try to hold people accountable for those murderous gangs and other illegal aliens activities at the Remembrance Project. Maria Espinoza, we'll have to leave it at that for the moment, but I hope you'll come back to us. And thank you for being here at CPAC.
More with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with fascinating people who are in the neighborhood here at the Conservative Political Action Conference. This is being taped because we're going to air it long after the conference has ended, but there's plenty to listen to here, folks, including our next guests who have brought to my attention something that I've heard about and been, I have to say, somewhat concerned about, but I think by the time they're done, we're all going to be terrified of, and that is the health consequences of exposure to intensive wireless energy transmissions. Our guests are Kevin Motis, who is the outreach director of the California Brain Tumor Association, and Dr. Paul Hereau, who is a professor of toxicology, physical health hazards, electromagnetism, and health at McGill University in Canada. Welcome to you both. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
So you have published yourselves, you have been speaking of, you were here at CPAC to otherwise raise awareness concerning a problem that has caused me to not use my handheld telephone next to my head, but it sounds like I may not want to have it anywhere near me for the foreseeable future, but even so, I'm likely to be exposed to a lot of this energy. So, Kevin, let me start with you. Talk about what the problem is here.
Yes.
And how serious it is.
Yeah, and you know, people say energy, but it's radiation. In the literature, this is radio frequency radiation, and people need to understand something very basic. Wireless transmitters are two-way microwave transmitters. So when you put a phone to your head, you're literally microwave radiating your head. When you put it that way, people can see that there's a problem. The industry's done a magnificent job separating the benefits in terms of convenience, which no one would argue with, from how the technology works. And we have solutions. We can have much safer technology, but we're not choosing that path. But that begins with starting with the problem. We know, and I deal with people every day who are getting very sick from wireless radiation. Neurological problems, headaches, tingling, dizziness, nausea.
No question that there's a connection between their handheld phones at their ear.
When they're near the wireless transmitter, the symptoms appear. When they go away, they go away. The relationship's pretty obvious. Then people develop in cancer over time, which is very serious, and the California Brain Tumor Association focuses on brain cancer being caused by cell phone radiation. And then people getting immune system problems, women getting fibromyalgia and other issues where we never used to have these diseases, which we believe is just the nervous system going haywire. Because understand this, your
wire
heart,
being the operative
yeah,
word.
Yeah, your heart has its own current and frequency to it, and your brain has its own current and frequency to it. We're electromagnetic beings. But understand this, regular Wi-Fi is 2.4 gigahertz. That's 2 billion waves per second passing through your body, far from what's natural where your body's about 10 hertz. So billions of times more. That's just from Wi-Fi. Our concern right now is the rollout of 5G. 5G is a huge aberration from the past. Right now we're at 1 to 3 gigahertz. It's going up to 24 to 90 gigahertz, which is 90 billion waves per second passing through our body. The problem is we're going from waves that are 3 or 4 feet long down to waves that are about an inch to half an inch. As a result, we need to have cell tower transmitters every 2 to 10 homes. It doesn't travel very well. The problem with that is we know around the world, when we located near a cell tower transmitter, cancer rates are about three times what they should be, and neurological effects increase as you get closer to the cell tower. But most people don't live near a cell tower, so it's not that much of an issue. But with 5G, that's all going to change. The part that upsets me as a Republican is you're not going to be notified of whether a transmitter is coming near your home, and legally you will not be able to talk about health and safety based on the 1996 Telecommunications Act passed by Congress. Section 704 said only the FCC can look at environmental effects, which legally has been expanded to include health and safety. Problem with the FCC looking at it? The FCC controls it, but they're not a health and safety agency. They have no one with a biological background in their agency, and they say, oh, don't worry, it's safe. But understand this, FCC is a captured agency. People can Google FCC captured agency. That's a report done by Harvard showing the compromise. And understand this, the chairman of the FCC is a former Verizon attorney. The FCC chairman that pushed out 5G was Tom Wheeler. He's the former president and CEO of CTIA, the wireless lobby group. The FCC has no interest in looking at health effects, no interest in the people that are sick, and is actively ignoring the science to support it.
This is a wired game, it sounds like, in other words. Doctor, let me bring you in. Paul Heroux, this description of the kinds of problems that the Brain Cancer Association in California is focused on ought to be front and center, one would think, in these kinds of decisions about the placement of transmitters and the extent to which the public safety is really being impacted. Talk a little bit about your studies of all this that presumably bear out these concerns.
In public health, to determine that an agent is noxious, we usually use three components. We use epidemiological evidence, which means observation on the rates of diseases in humans. We also use animal experiments, and we use mechanistic evidence. And there's, do we know how these effects could occur? So if you have all three components, you have a very, very good argument to claim we must restrict the use of this agent. On the subject of epidemiology, in 2001 and in 2011, there were two large reports, about 300 pages each, that were issued by the International Agency for Research on Cancer in Lyon, France, confirming that electromagnetic radiation generally is a risk factor related to cancer, both in leukemia in children and in brain tumors in the users of cell phones. So this organization is the gold standard in the world in terms of determining what is noxious and what is connected with cancer.
And they say electromagnetic radiation is.
Yes, they say it's a 2B classification, and it's going to be updated soon on the basis of animal studies. One study in the United States performed by the National Toxicology Program at a cost of $25 million was released last week, and it confirmed the fact that this radiation in animals had the potential to produce cancer in the nervous systems, and since the nervous system penetrates many organs, it is present throughout the body. Mm-hmm. Next week, in Italy, the Ramazzini Institute in Bologna will release a similar study that confirms essentially all the results of the NTP investigation. Wow. So these studies are very, very rare because they're very, very costly, mm-hmm. and they were meant to put an end to the controversy, and they squarely show that the animal evidence is there.
Well, they were meant to put an end to the controversy in favor of the business we're in rather than to raise yes. profound questions about the advisability of going down this road. So just so I'm clear, if you were to stay with the 4G mm-hmm. system as kind of the upper bounds, mm-hmm. obviously, this would be a burden on people who are always looking for more and more bandwidth, presumably, and the ability to communicate more information and video and the like. But would that keep us out of a peril that you've described, or are we in danger just with the existing system, let alone what is now in prospect?
These studies in animals that confirm the risk don't use 5G radiation. Mm. They use earlier radiation. And the evidence on cancer is something that is from the past. So the answer to your question is that we have to curb our use of electromagnetic radiation and increase the use of optical fiber, which is a lot faster than wireless. In other words, we simply have to change the way the methods that we transmit data. We can have the same services. We can still have cell phones, but we have to change the way in which they're designed, the way in which they're used, and use another technique that's already in the pocket of the industry that it uses for itself, optical fiber, which is incredibly fast.
Wow. All right. So we're going to have to pause and drill down on that possible solution to this problem. Obviously, it would require considerable investment in different equipment, presumably both the transmitters and the handheld devices and so on. But we'll come back to that and discuss it in greater detail with Kevin Motis of the California Brain Tumor Association, its outreach director, and Dr. Paul Perot of McGill University. That and much more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are continuing in really important and I have a feeling extremely timely conversation about the effects most of us are oblivious to of electromagnetic radiation associated with communication systems that we now all rely on, let's face it, almost like oxygen, one might say. We're discussing these concerns with two people who are deeply knowledgeable about them. Kevin Motis, the outreach director for the California Brain Tumor Association, who has become so concerned about this problem that he is actually running for the United States Senate as a Republican candidate on a platform of trying to bring to bear both a level of awareness about the problem and the kinds of corrective actions that we're going to be discussing here momentarily. He's joined by his colleague, Dr. Paul Perot. He is a professor of toxicology, physical health hazards, electromagnetism, and health at McGill University in Canada. Gentlemen, thank you again for joining us. I wanted you to pick up on some of the points that I was raising in the previous segment quickly, and then we're going to come back to more on the solutions.
Yeah. Understand, the industry is selling 5G as more connectivity in terms of our phone. We already have 96% connectivity between people. This is about the Internet of Things, to connect your stove with your teapot, with your forks and things like that. The problem with that vision is...
forks?
Everything they're talking about, everything will have a transmitter, that can have a transmitter in these smart homes. The problem is that puts you in a sea of microwave radiation within your own home, which is very unhealthy to begin with. And the other thing we want to talk about is the rollout, using our alternative of fiber optic. The rollout of 5G as it's envisioned is going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars. Fiber optic is not a more expensive solution. We don't have to dig for it anymore. We can run it along the phone lines right to the home. But when you run fiber optic to the home and the routers inside your home, you control the data. Mm. The idea of having the transmitters outside the home is so the industry controls the data and they could sell that data. That's a huge violation of our privacy and our privacy rights.
Yeah.
And then the vision is wired connections to the computer with wired keyboards and mouses, wired phones inside the home, no wireless, no microwaves, no problem. When you leave your home...
No wireless in terms of a transmitter inside that you're using as your router?
Absolutely.
That would be wired?
It would be a wired router.
Have to be wired to your router?
But it's so much faster and much more cyber secure. As a Republican, I'm worried about cybersecurity.
I am as well.
There is no secure wireless system, and your audience should Google CIA director spying thermostat. This is when one of our former CIA directors says, I'm worried about being spied on by my wireless thermostat because it's a two-way transmitter. It can be activated to collect information.
Yeah. And that's nothing of Alexa. I mean, the degree to which we're going down that road is
people have no idea that they're getting, people are having their data collected with their own permission. It's insane. Yeah. But this is a former CIA director. This is not a fringe issue. But fiber optic would make us much more cyber secure. It would make us the number one country in terms of data transmission because it's up to 10,000 times faster. And then when we leave the home, we could use cell phones to a minimum, and we have cell tower transmitters not located near living people. Mm-hmm. That's the solution. That's the vision. We have it within our means. We don't want to stop the technology. We love the Internet and the power of the Internet. We want it to direct industry mm-hmm. to a health healthier, better solution. Yep. The problem is they sell transmitters, so they want to put transmitters in everything. They want that data because it's much more valuable than the services they have now. Well, we have to stick up for our privacy rights, the rights for due process, the rights to protect our home and families. So people can go to my website, KevinModisForSenate2018.com, and download some of these studies. They can go to bioinitiative.org, or saferemr.com. This is out of UC Berkeley School of Public Health. This is not a fringe issue. It's been kept on the fringe.
Doctor, let me ask you about these solutions. To the extent that people listening to this program are really hearing for the first time about this Internet of Things being a toxic soup that they will be living in. I mean, I have my concerns about this whole idea anyway. I mean, it seems to me, as you've indicated, that the certitude that hostile powers will be taking advantage of the opportunity to collect information about us or simply screw us up. A big concern from a national security point of view, of course, is the grid's vulnerability or the Internet's vulnerability being used as a weapon of war. Now, you're talking about it being used as a means of physical destruction as well. How serious a problem is this idea that if everything is connected to everything else via the Internet, it actually is going to be a public health nightmare?
We know that because the 5G system and the Internet of Things will require a lot more transfer of information, essentially we will be increasing the crowding of the electromagnetic environment. And this is essentially deleterious to human beings, because human beings and all living systems, it's not limited to humans, even vegetation, bees, birds, everything is subject to these effects. All of this evolved for 2 billion years in a context of 3 microwatts per square meter. Presently, the limit set by the FCC for human exposure is 10 million microwatts per square meter. So we've departed from the natural environment by a factor of 3.3 million. No organism defends itself against agents that are not present in its environment. So it's a wild speculation to think that biological systems would be immune to it. And what we know is that in metallic conductors, you know, electrons move over micrometers, tens of micrometers. In biological systems, they simply move over much smaller distances. But we changed the ability of charges to jump from one molecule to another. We impair very specific enzymes that we know of, like ATP synthase. We impair the ability of molecules to detoxify reactive oxygen species, specifically the reaction between ubiquinone and vitamin E. So we've documented this repeatedly, you know, in many locations in the world, that reactive oxygen species are increased, that the oxidative phosphorylation chain is disturbed, and this is a mechanism that is so basic to living systems that biologists tell us, tamper with this mechanism at your peril. Mm.
Your statistics there are mind-boggling, and I get the impression that those numbers don't reflect the kind of kicking up that you've been describing here of the 5G, or is that 10 million, whatever it is, reflecting that permission to go to this higher level of electromagnetic radiation?
Yes, the Internet of Things, in principle, as well as FCC rules, could bring us to this 10 million. Mm. You know, in many countries of the world, we're around numbers like 3,000 microwatts per square meter, which is already 1,000 times higher than the natural environment. But there's plenty of territory to cover, according to the industry. And engineers dream in terms of operation of systems. Mm. They don't think about health impacts.
Just to be clear, what you've said in the previous segment was it's not just the engineers who aren't thinking about these impacts. It's also the regulators who aren't thinking about these impacts or aren't even apparently equipped to understand them.
And understand, the EPA used to be involved in this, had their own scientists doing their own studies showing the same effects 20 years ago. They were consciously taken out of the game by Congress. Mm-hmm. But understand this, one of the toys with the Internet of Things is self-driving cars. And as Republicans, that means they'll be able to stop your car centrally. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. I don't know many Republicans who want their vehicles being able to be stopped by central government and read the data in your car and know everything you're doing in your car.
Again,
this is part of the plan. Republicans need to wake up. Contact us, 5gharmful@gmail.com. Look at bioinitiative.org.
We are out of time. I'm sorry to say we have obviously a lot more to learn about this. I appreciate both of you being here at the Conservative Political Action Conference, making a point of visiting with us. I'm sure this is going to be a wake-up call to an awful lot of people. Come back to us again. Kevin Motis and Dr. Paul Heroux. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.